It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, every so often we like to dedicate an hour to Iowa innovators. So today we'll be hearing from a handful of people trying out some new ideas, including in a few minutes we'll talk with Scott Long of Zero Energy Systems in Coralville. They produce energy-efficient concrete wall panels. Something special about these panels. We'll find out about that in a few minutes. Also, Iowa State University student Shelby Schmidt with her new idea for earth-friendly diapers and children's apparel. And an Iowa husband and wife, Brian and Leslie Triplett, in the second half hour. They've just launched a company called On the Road Bus Adventures, an idea where they have trips for people across the United States, parts of the U.S., where riders are offered as much adventure and fun in the bus as at the stops. So that's all coming your way this hour. I want to remind you that if you know of an innovator in your community, someone who's trying out new business venture or launching a new facet of the business that already exists, let us know. Maybe we'll talk with them in a future program dedicated to Iowa innovators. Our email address is rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. My first guest, Iowa innovator, is a school teacher who's turned into a tech entrepreneur. Michael Einan Lynch is co-founder and COO and chief educator at Pear Deck. And Michael joins me in the studio today.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you.
Pear Deck. What a lovely title. Tell us what Pear Deck does for teachers in the classroom.
Yeah. Pear Deck is a platform built on Google Drive, so fully integrated with Google Drive, that lets teachers create interactive presentations and formative assessments and then launch those straight to student computers where students can follow along and answer the interactive questions. The results come up in real time on the projector screen anonymously. So in this way, the teacher gets feedback, gets answers from every single student in the class, not just the ones that are brave enough to raise their hands. And the teacher and the students don't have to worry about that fear of being called out. So the answers come up anonymously on the projector screen, and the teachers and the students can benefit from the...
But the teacher knows that the answers are connected to a student for the teacher.
Yes, yes.
Okay, okay. So this solves that age-old problem which has existed as long as there have been classrooms, right, where you've got the same three or four students answering all the questions. And the teacher's what? Wondering, is everybody getting it or is it just these three or four kids?
Exactly. I know. I personally was a student that no matter how interested I was in the topic, there was no way I was going to raise my hand in front of all of my peers and venture and put forth an idea. So I think this is a great way for all of those voices to be heard, voices that aren't normally heard in the classroom.
Do you have an example of some questions that might be up there that you've tackled just to make it a little more concrete in our minds?
Yeah. And actually, this is a place where I think Pear Deck kind of goes in a new direction as well. An example of a question would be the teacher could put up a map on the screen and say, where do you think volcanoes might form? And students can drag a dot to a place on that map where they think volcanoes form. And this represents a shift in the way lessons are taught, because typically we would, as teachers, maybe say, well, this is a lesson I'm going to teach. I'm going to teach students how volcanoes form, and then I will start explaining the facts to them. But in this way, right away, the students are beginning to think, well, where do volcanoes form? And now we can start asking, why do they form there? Are there any patterns in this? So the lesson is being propelled by their inquiry rather than by teacher facts.
Now, I understand, Michael, you have this in 12 schools in a beta phase throughout the country?
Originally, yes. We started with 12 beta schools, and we've had thousands of teachers and administrators sign up for our beta waiting list, and so now we're letting in more and more schools.
What are you hearing from the initial schools, initial classrooms who are employing this? What's the feedback?
It's been really exciting. We've been hearing things like every teacher needs to see this and see how many voices are normally going unheard, or, you know, every teacher needs to see the students that they're not normally hearing from. So it's been a really exciting process so far. People are tweeting pictures of their students using it and sort of cheering about it.
Mm-hmm. And this is an addition. It's not like we're stopping classroom discussion. This is in addition, this complements it, right?
Yes, exactly. And more actually geared toward propelling discussion. So now that we've gotten opinions from everyone in the classroom, where does that lead us? Mm-hmm. What interesting questions come out of everybody's answers and opinions?
And I can imagine this is also good for students that aren't really allowed to tune out, are they? Because if you don't answer a question, your teacher immediately knows because you didn't type it in.
Yeah, and in this way, teachers can do formative assessments, which is something that's becoming more and more important in the classroom. This lets teachers check in quickly with everyone and see if the students aren't understanding. And maybe if 50% of my students aren't even understanding what I'm talking about, then I need to switch gears a little bit and try something else rather than just continue with my plan, regardless of how many students are kind of falling off.
Quickly, where do you see this in a few years?
Goodness. I guess as the best, most widely used interactive presentation software.
So we might be hearing a lot about Pear Deck, which brings me to the final question. Pear Deck, love the title of this this application and your startup. Where did Pear Deck come from? Pear, it's like pear as in the fruit.
It is. We really like our logo. That's part of where it comes from. It's a very cute little pear. And also we like the idea of pairing devices. We like all of the puns possible.
Okay. Michael Einan Lynch, co-founder, COO, and chief educator at Pear Deck. How can people get in touch with you?
You can contact me at michael@peardeck.com. And you can also find us on Twitter at Pear Deck.
Okay, very good. It's an innovator, Iowa Innovator Show today on River to River. And our next innovator is Scott Long, co-owner of Zero Energy Systems in Coralville. Hi, Scott.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for coming into our Iowa City studio.
Thanks for having me.
You launched Zero Energy Systems in Coralville. Was it this year or last year?
We just officially opened about 30 days ago.
Wow, that is new. You produce energy-efficient concrete wall panels. Sounds like something that's been around for a while, but yours are different. How?
Well, what's really different about what we do is the computer automated manufacturing process. The product itself has been around for about 3.5 decades. It's been widely used in industrial and commercial applications. There is a number of producers in the United States that can make these types of concrete elements. But what we really focused on years ago was looking at making the product more accessible to the public, making it more affordable, more available, and speeding up the manufacturing process. And so our journeys really started in Europe, particularly in Germany, where these types of building elements are 80% to 90% of their market. They've had decades to refine these automated processes, a very competitive landscape, very mature market. And we adopted a lot of this manufacturing technology with what our United States or U.S.-based offering is and came up with a very unique one-of-a-kind manufacturing facility in the United States.
So give me a visual on your manufacturing facility and how it's different. Are we talking about customized concrete wall panels that are produced sort of very quickly for on demand?
Absolutely. We do not build what we would call stock items or standard pieces. Everything is a custom-made order. Current production is a single form. Tape measures, lots of lumber, lots of drills and tools. Our facility is more in line to what you would see in General Motors assembly line type manufacturing, where the casting surfaces actually move around a plant floor. We use technology that uses CAD-CAM interface or computer-aided manufacturing that takes CAD files or CAD drawings that we receive from architects and engineers and actually inkjet plots that data, that mm-hmm. information, onto a form that is then circulated around a plant floor. And so what happens is you go from an environment of producing maybe 3 or 4 elements per day with 30 to 40 employees to an environment where we can produce 30 to 50 elements per day with 8 to 10 employees. Mm-hmm. And the difference in that is not targeted really to reduce human involvement. It's really intended to reduce the overall cost of the product. Larger volume, lesser labor component associated with it.
This is happening right now in Coralville.
It is, absolutely.
And you have how many employees out there now?
There will be a total of 8 running the actual production area and 1 production manager.
Okay, I'm a contractor. Why do I want your product more than an off-the-shelf thing that I sort of cut or fashion to my need, right? Why do I need a customized concrete wall panel?
Well, you know, there's a lot of in the public side of what we do in terms of school district applications, for example, there's speed of construction. We could produce the average size school in 3 to 4 production days. It would take the equivalent of 3 to 4 production days to install the entire school. And so when you look at traditional methods of using individual concrete blocks, it can take months on end to install. It allows schools to open sooner, allows retailers to open more quickly. The energy efficiency component, lead points, more durable structures are all desired today. It's an issue of availability and cost.
What is cost on this compared to conventional
methods? Our ability with the automation that we have and our real target market is to match current pricing structures for similar technologies, and mm-hmm. we have the ability to actually do that.
Scott Long, co-owner of Zero Energy Systems in Coralville. I understand you grew up in this area in the corridor, Cedar Rapids.
I did.
Living in Iowa City, Coralville area. But you gained your skills, your knowledge, your idea from time living in Germany? Tell me about that quickly.
I wouldn't say living. Time commuting to Germany. We started okay. in the late 90s really looking at automation, which has come quite a ways since 1997, 98 in terms of the computer side of it. And that, I think, really evolved as we evolved through the process. And so we spent quite a bit of time touring different factories overseas, working with different European automation companies. In our current facility in Coralville, we have 3 different firms, all based in Germany, that really collaborated on the project to come to this end result.
Mm-hmm. And you just saw on our continent that it wasn't happening on the scale that it was happening in Germany and the rest of Europe. And you saw bring it here.
Yeah. I mean, we have been at the insulated wall panel business again since the late 90s. What we saw was a great amount of demand for the product, but a very poor delivery system to get it to contractors or to corporate accounts. And the function of the automation from Europe was really to address that situation and be able to, again, produce at these volumes and price points that are necessary for the U.S. public to embrace products like this.
How do you estimate your potential for growth in the next few years?
Significant. I think we're looking at this facility probably being full by the end of 2014. We're looking at expansion plants into the Gulf Coast area in Houston, back into the Southwest markets in California where we've once performed. And hopefully over the next 10 years, we're looking at 3 to 4 more locations.
Scott, you come from a family of entrepreneurs, don't you?
I do.
Your father kicked this off?
He started this in our garage in the early 1980s with a product called Thermomass, which we still use today, which is the fiber composite device that holds the whole wall panel together. And he really kicked off the whole national interest in insulating concrete and using it as a building medium.
Mm-hmm. And a brother as well?
I have a brother in town that founded Meta Communications some 20 years ago, and he's grown that business significantly.
Wow. Interesting dinner conversations at family gatherings, I bet.
We don't talk about business.
No?
We know better than that.
Is that one of those things, religion, politics, business,
and business
you add to your list?
Yeah, we're all pretty stubborn in our opinions. But no, you know, it's been part of our family's culture for so long. It's just what we do.
Okay. Thank you very much for that overview. Scott Long, co-owner of Zero Energy Systems in Coralville. Perhaps we'll check back with you to see how the predictions came true, to the degree to which they came true. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you very much.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with an Iowa Innovators program. From time to time, we like to check in with a number of people who are making new things, having new ideas, launching things, taking a certain amount of risk in whatever venture it is, talking with them about it. And if you know of an innovator in your community, someone who's trying out a new business venture, launching a new facet of an existing business, let us know. If you can imagine it being talked about on this program, it might be a good idea. Our email is rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. My next guest is Shelby Schmidt, a student at Iowa State University. She took part in Iowa State University's recent College of Human Sciences Entrepreneurship Showcase. Shelby Schmidt, welcome to our program.
Hi, thanks.
Let's see. A lot of students giving pitches at this showcase. What was your pitch?
My pitch was a philanthropic children's clothing company called Love Bug Design. And so I was entered in the sustainable business category. And what I'm doing is hoping to partner with children's homes and orphanages in urban American cities And then also partnering with customers looking to buy clothes for their children. And I have a have one, help one philosophy where my customers can buy one item of children's clothing to take home to their child at home, and then they're also donating another item to one of these children's homes that I partner with.
Mm. So, Shelby, what makes you think this works better than the typical, well, for lack of a better word, the junk mail approach? We all get it at home, and we want to support those who are in need around the country and around the world. But why does this approach, you think, work better?
I really think that this works because it really doesn't take the shopper out of their own element. They are able to continue what they're doing on a regular day-to-day basis, but they're actually being able to help and extend that help and love to others that they wouldn't have had the opportunity to do so.
Mm-hmm. And where in the country, who would be receiving this philanthropy?
I really hope to reach out to specifically the Chicago area, and that would be where I would start. But then also just in different areas, I'd be looking into mostly the urban cities where there are significant amounts of homeless children or orphan children that are in need.
Mm-hmm. Where did you get the idea, Shelby?
I took a mission trip actually when I was about 13 to inner city Chicago, and I was given the opportunity to work with small children who were in this sort of predicament where they had nothing and they couldn't fend for themselves, and my heart really broke for them. And so I knew that I needed to do something about it. And ever since then, I've decided to become a fashion design major at Iowa State with a minor in entrepreneurship, and really have tried to shape these skills in order to be able to help children such as the ones that I worked with when I was young.
You're a junior at ISU?
I am, yes.
Mm-hmm. So what's the next step? This sounds like it carries on past graduation.
Yeah, I would love for it to. Currently, I just have a Facebook presence with Love Bug Design selling sustainable cloth diapers. But I hope to expand it into an Etsy business sometime in the summer, then maybe start selling at different farmers markets, and then really gaining those partnerships and those clients, that client base, and expanding it even further within a few years after graduation into even maybe a store or something like that in one of my urban partnering cities.
Okay. Thank you. Shelby Schmidt is an entrepreneur and fashion design major, you said, right?
Yep.
And thank you for this. We wish you all the best of luck with this innovative philanthropic idea, Love Bug Designs. Shelby, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Tom Halterman is our next guest. Here's the topic we want to talk with Tom about. We had him on the show a little over a year ago. What if your boss offered you unlimited vacation and sick days? Yes, I said unlimited vacation and sick days. Do you think you'd be more productive? Do you think you'd be less productive? Do you think it would be better or worse for your company? Tom Halterman is the CEO of Outcomes MTM of West Des Moines. The company provides medication therapy management. Welcome back to our program, Tom.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Now, the last time we talked, January of 2013, you just started this policy of unlimited vacation days for some 50-plus employees, something called a My Time program. Is that still in place?
It still is in place. That's correct. When I spoke with you, we had just kicked it off in October, and then we were visiting in January. So we've now got a good year and a half under our belt with it, and it's been a success. The employees seem to have generally embraced it. I've gotten good feedback from managers similarly that it's just one less administrative thing on their shoulders. I did have one employee share with me that she felt like it made her, she feels like she's the CEO of her job now, that she's better able to take control of what her job responsibilities are, and really kind of the opposite end of the spectrum for somebody who's, sitting there looking at the clock waiting for it to tick to, right, from 4:59 to 5 o'clock.
Right. For someone out there, especially a business owner or manager out there who can't imagine how this would work, because it's on its face, it's like, this is ridiculous, Tom, but it does work. So what are the forces at work that we don't understand?
Well, right now I'd say probably the the bigger concern that we have is, when people did have, prior to this program, we had, people earned so much paid time off each week. Over the course of the year, they earned their paid time off. And I think probably the biggest thing we're having to be mindful of right now is making sure people know that it's okay for them to take time off. We put this program in place because, we've got a relatively young workforce. Our average age is about 32 years old, and they've got lots of stuff going on. They're getting married. They're going on honeymoons. Their friends are getting married.
So the tendency here is for you to create more workaholics, is what you're saying.
Correct.
That's the biggest danger.
That's what we're trying to watch out for right now, is that making sure people know that they're not taking. We're concerned they're not taking enough time off.
I see. I see. So how have you tweaked the program to accommodate that, so people get some downtime?
Yeah, mostly it's been through education, just trying to drive that message through to our staff that it's okay for them to take time off, that we want them to do so. And we had, to a certain degree, we had some of that issue when we had a monitored paid time off program. We did have some employees who just didn't take any, and we kind of had to nudge them as well. But it's probably made it somewhat more acute.
Mm-hmm. Any sort of envious eyes, someone looking across to the other cubicle and saying, that Sarah takes a lot of time off. I can't afford to, but that makes me a little, that bothers me a bit.
Yeah, we've had zero complaints from the managers, from the supervisor side of things. We've fielded one complaint from a staff member who felt like a lateral coworker was perhaps using too much of the time. That came through our HR department, and we investigated it and spoke with that person's manager, and that person's manager was just fine with the amount of work that person was getting done and the amount of time they were taking off. So that concern turned out to be unsubstantiated, but there is a potential liability there that if employees feel like somebody isn't carrying their weight, you could have some envy going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tom Halterman, thanks for letting us check in with you, CEO
sure.
of Outcomes MTM of West Des Moines, and this sounds like a long term policy now, huh?
It's something we're going to keep in place.
Very good, Tom Halterman.
Thank
you. Thanks. It's an Iowa Innovator show on River to River today. And when we come back, we'll talk with husband and wife, Brian and Leslie Triplett. They have an innovative idea, making a bus tour across the United States as much of an adventure in the bus as it is at the sightseeing stops. That's what we'll talk about when we return. Brian and Leslie Triplett. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And from time to time on this program, we like to meet innovative entrepreneurs. That's what we're doing today. Two University of Iowa graduates, Brian and Leslie Triplett, are young entrepreneurs and adventurers, and they are seeking customers with adventurous spirits as well. They've just started a new coast-to-coast bus tour business called On the Road Bus Adventures. You can find it at ontheroadbusadventures.com, and they join me for this portion of the program. Leslie and Brian, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So last year, I understand, you did a single pilot bus tour trip during the summer of 2013. This year, you're planning six trips between May and November. What is it that happened on that pilot trip last year that told you, yes, this is a go, green lights? Brian.
Well, it was pretty spectacular. We ended up with a group of seven travelers from around the globe representing three different countries. It was all their first time in America in their entire lives. And we spent 24 days on the road together from San Francisco to New York. And I think any other month in my life, I maybe have a couple memories. But from this particular month last summer, every day is extremely vivid. And we still keep in touch with these folks. So we realized...
Where were they from?
We had three from Australia, two from Denmark, and two from France.
Okay. Every day full of great memories. I want you to share them. And then I'm going to ask you too, Leslie.
Okay.
So, but Brian, what pick out a memory that sticks out for you from that pilot trip.
Well, let's see. Which one to choose? I would say the first day.
Oh, that was mine.
Okay. I'll talk about the last day. So we'll go in reverse. This is Quentin Tarantino style. The last day of the trip, we found ourselves in New York. That was the drop-off point. We were going to say goodbye to our group members. And the way we had structured it, that was the drop-off point. That was the end of the trip, you know, that we had been planning. And the group gets to New York City. We pull in late afternoon, and they said, what are we doing tonight? And we said, no, you don't understand. That's the end of the trip. But they weren't willing to accept it. So they made us come up with a meeting spot at a nice hip restaurant that night. And we all, socialized till the wee hours of the morning.
It had to be the ultimate compliment to have them all say, this cannot end. Instead of the what many tour guides get, I'm sure, is the obligatory, thank you very much, I'm exhausted. I got to get home.
There were a lot of tears. A lot of tears.
I cried like a baby.
Okay, so now Leslie's going to take us back to the first day of this how many day tour?
Yes, 24 days.
Okay, what is the memory you picked out?
So, you know, there was a lot of build up to this. We had driven our bus out, just the two of us, and, you know, we'd look in the rearview mirror at all these empty seats, and we always wondered what it would be like to have people on them.
And you're on the West Coast now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we picked him up in San Francisco and, you know, got on the bus that first day and went to Yosemite, and, you know, it was very surreal having actual real people on the bus. And our first day we took them on a hike in Yosemite to some waterfalls. And then we got back on the bus at the end of the day, and the sun's going down and everyone's cracking open a beer on the bus. And we kind of just looked at each other and we were like, wow, this is actually happening. This is a dream come true.
Right. And you'd imagined some form of that for weeks and months in advance of how will it be when I'm in charge of these people and they expect us to provide for their everything for the next 25 days, right?
It was a tall order first, and who knows when they'll be back to the States. Yeah. But I think we did a good job. Yeah.
So when you took that and you turned it into a business model, and you're going to try it out six times between May and November this year. So what did you undoubtedly had a lot of conversations about what made that work really well? What makes us different? What made that work? What did you crystallize out?
So I had the idea several years back, and I won't take you through the whole story here, but it wasn't until I met Leslie we got serious about it. And the idea was to recreate the Great American Road Trip. So we like to say they're not tours, they're road trips. It's not just about sightseeing, but it's about the right snacks, the right music, the right amount of spontaneity. And with a small group size, we give them the flexibility to point out the window and say, hey.
So the traveling between places is not
part of the fun.
So you're not telling me the path is the goal, are you?
We're trying to avoid cliches, but
that's the idea behind it. So on the bus, what happens?
What happens on the bus?
Oh, we have a lot of fun. Well, you know, it kind of depends on how long we're going that day, but you know, everyone has snacks. We have coolers full of food. Everyone's sharing, passing around different things, and we have a bookshelf with books. People are reading, looking at travel books. We've got a TV, and so sometimes we'll watch a television series if we have a really long day on the bus, and you'll look back and people will be just like have these looks on their face. We watched Homeland. That was very memorable. Uh-huh. Good music, just
and this is not just any bus, so we can't just picture a coach bus here. That's a
no.
typical.
No,
what
oh,
dis-
no.
describe the bus here? This is unique.
This is a 15-passenger vintage school bus that we purchased when we saw it. We knew it was the one, and we souped it up, and it's got a luggage rack on top, and has wireless internet in there, so people can send messages back home. And basically, it's designed to meet travelers' needs, so that when they're off the bus, they can maximize their time in these spots. So we had a lot of postcard writing and sharing photos and writing family back home. A lot of these people had been traveling for a good year, so it was important to make sure they could keep in touch. And so, you know, Leslie and I have traveled throughout 50 countries on six continents ourselves. So I think not only did we take the time to explore America and figure out the places we wanted to show them, but we know what it's like to be this backpacker-style traveler. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of thought went into the bus.
It's inside of our bus is kind of like a piece of art. There's maps hanging on every surface of the walls, and we collected postcards everywhere we went, and the group would kind of take turns picking out a postcard and putting that up there. And then the seats we reupholstered. I reupholstered them when Brian was driving out, and we were on driving on 80, and I had my staple gun and was was making the seats look better.
I would look back in the rearview mirror, and everybody was doing something different. Someone was just gazing out the window. Someone was maybe taking a nap. Someone was writing in their journal. A couple people were talking despite the language barriers that existed. And it was pretty much what we had imagined. It exceeded our expectations, really.
My guests, if you just joined us, Leslie and Brian Triplett, founders of the new company, OnTheRoadBusAdventures.com is where you can find it. And that's pretty much a description of what we're talking about as they launch this new entrepreneurial adventure. So you had during that pilot road trip, people from outside the country on that road trip. Is that your target audience for this, Leslie?
That's kind of how it started. So our trips are 25 days. So obviously the typical American doesn't have 25 days of vacation. So it was meant for people who are on a gap year, taking a whole year to travel around the world.
Or Europeans. They have those kind of vacations.
Yes, that's true. Europeans, Australians. So that's kind of what we had in mind. But of course, we would love to have a mixture of people from other countries and Americans. I think it would be good kind of to have them interact. It would be interesting for the foreigners to get to meet Americans and spend time with them. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be good for students, too, if they have, you know, the summers off and didn't have to work.
Now, you have on your website, on the roadbusadventures.com, you have four routes that you offer. Tell us about the routes. There's a northern, a southern route, a northwest, and a southwest route. How did you choose what you were going to do?
Well, my first memory of actually starting to plan this with Leslie, we were at a bar where great ideas come to fruition, right? And we had a bar napkin, and we said, all right, what's everything American? And we filled that up pretty quickly, from backyard barbecues to rodeos to baseball games to the natural beauties, culture, big cities, small towns, everything in between. And then we spent the summer prior road tripping 20,000 miles, just the two of us, to scout out the ideal routes. And initially, the idea was we would connect coast to coast, New York and San Francisco. We designed a southern route and a northern route. And that was going to be pretty much the basis for our road trips moving forward. And it wasn't until, you know, we had heard back from a lot of the potential travelers who said, you know, I don't have that much time. Do you offer anything shorter? So we listened to them and just pretty recently designed and launched two additional trips that are 10 days long. One explores the Northwest region and one explores the Southwest region. And those both start and stop in San Francisco. So it'd be quite easy.
So one loops southward from San Francisco, one loops northward from San Francisco.
Yep.
The northern route, the cross-country, coast-to-coast routes start in San Francisco and go to New York City?
It depends on the dates.
Start or end in San Francisco or New York.
Okay. Your southerly route really goes into the deep south, doesn't it?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Well, taking it a day at a time when we were on the road was quite easy. You know, you'd take a look at the atlas and say, all right, what's on our radar here? What's within a day's drive radius? And we had to make some tough choices, especially in the south, as you mentioned. You know, do you want to cut up through Alabama, Mississippi, and blues country and go to Nashville? Or do you want to hug the coast and go to Savannah and Charleston? So we had to make some tough decisions, but that was a big part of the fun. And so, as you'll see, our routes don't take a direct line across the country. They're about 6,000 miles each of the 25-day trips. But we like to take the back roads when mm-hmm. possible, and it's not about just getting there. It's about seeing what happens in between.
So let's tell me about the northern route, which includes Iowa.
It does include Iowa, yes. So the northern route
starts in San Francisco.
And then we go up through Oregon and Washington to Idaho, through Wyoming, Montana. We go to some great national parks. Glacier is one of our favorite stops, and Yellowstone and the Grand Tetons and Deadwood. And eventually we make our way through the Midwest, which we're really excited about. We didn't get a chance to do the northern route last summer. So I think a big draw to our trips, what kind of makes us unique, is that there's a whole little local aspect of it. So, you know, when we're in Iowa City, we want to include as many people as possible and, you know, show them this is where we live and these are our friends. This is where we went to university and get to see a really intimate side of the country that mm-hmm. most people who come to America don't come to Iowa City.
Okay. Let me I love Iowa uh-huh. as much as you, but let me just step into the shoes of an ignorant, we mm-hmm. have to say ignorant, Iowa critic and say, what the heck what do I want to do in the corn and soybean fields in Iowa? What do I want to do? What do you say to that critic, Leslie?
Well, I would say that you'd be shocked at what an amazing town we have here. Tons of just life, great restaurants, great nightlife. Just having the students here, I think, would be very surprising to some of them to see all these young people in one spot. And I would love to have them here for a football game, which might be possible.
Go to Kinnick Stadium.
Yeah.
anything to add to the Iowa experience, Brian?
Well, you know, some of our favorite travel memories are being in places that we've never even heard of. It's not just the big cities, but it's the places that, you know, you wouldn't have discovered otherwise. So just kind of the entire idea of being in the middle of nowhere can be quite exciting to a traveler.
Brian and Leslie Triplett are my guests for this portion of the program on River to River, On the Road Bus Adventures. That's the new company that they've launched here. They had a pilot program last year in 2013 and decided, thumbs up, let's go for it in 2014. So they have 6 trips planned in their renovated, highly stylized. It sounds like a wonderful bus. Maybe we can get some pictures and put it on our website.
Yeah,
absolutely. I smile every time I see a picture of it. I want to get back on there.
It's my happy place for sure.
So you've talked about the high points that you hope to achieve in this, but you have to, and I know, you know, as budding entrepreneurs, we'll think of what could be the pitfalls. What are the things we want, as seasoned travelers, we want to avoid? What do you imagine are those biggest challenges out there, Leslie?
Definitely. I think the biggest challenge is having people trust us. You know, so we're a new company and most of our customers are coming from across the ocean. So I think putting myself in their shoes, it's hard to trust that we are who we are and that we're not we're not going to scam them or anything. And we actually had a pretty funny story about one of the girls who was on our trip last year.
Where was she from?
From Australia. Mm-hmm. She'd write us an email a week having a question. And then finally, one day she said, well, my dad's a lawyer and we want to make sure that you this is safe and this is real. And so, you know, how can I trust you guys? And we, you know, came up with a response that made her trust us. And then, you know, she ended up being great on the trip. And a few weeks in or a few days in, she said, guys, I have a confession to make. My dad's in real estate. He's not a lawyer. I was just really scared that you guys were going to take my money and there was going to be no bus. So I think that's a really big challenge is getting our name out there.
I mean, for people, especially who live abroad, the impression that Hollywood gives of the United States is the reality that many mm-hmm. people have until they come here. Right, Ryan?
There's a lot of skepticism when it comes to traveling. You know, there's, I think, a horror movie called Hostel, and so that can lead people to believe that bad things are going to happen. Leslie and I have had really nothing but positive experiences as travelers. And so, you know, these folks that are oftentimes going around the world on an entire gap year adventure. So, you know, they've been through the ups and downs of traveling. So by the time they get to us, you know, they're just they're pretty relaxed. But yeah, I think absolutely it's difficult to expect someone to send their money overseas. And it's just a matter of gaining a reputation and showing them that you're legitimate.
While we're on the topic of having people trust you enough to fork over some money, what is sort of the range of costs here that people can expect depending on the route? From where to where are we talking about? What kind of a investment are we talking about for a month or 10 days, Leslie?
So our 25-day trips are $2,900 and our 10-day trips are $1,150. And this price includes all accommodations. So that's a combination of camping, where we have all the gear provided, hotels, hostels, rent houses, and rent cabins. It's breakfast and lunch every day.
Are you two making the breakfast and lunch sometimes?
She's a fantastic cook.
Yeah, by you two, me.
I do the dishes.
Okay. Yeah, I saw Brian's looking only at you. He does the dishes.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
He helps. He does a lot of the driving and the heavy lifting.
So what American specialties do you have on your menu, Leslie?
Well, you know, we try to have a good mix to please everyone. I think one of the favorites was just the classic grilled cheese sandwich, or as this sweet little French girl would always say, cheesy toasts.
Cheesy toast?
Cheesy toast. She could eat like 10 of them.
And s'mores.
And s'mores, yep.
You said at the beginning that you've traveled in 50 countries?
Mm-hmm. I think roughly if you add up the countries we've been to, either together or separately. Yeah, we like to travel. We're kindred spirits, and we both value experiences. And so, yeah, we've had some adventures.
Since at your young ages, and you've been married for, what, coming up on a couple years now?
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know better than I do. Yeah, it'll be 2 years
now. You are seasoned travelers, even at your young ages. So perhaps we could end by having a travel story from each of you. What do you fish out when you say, okay, this is what traveling can be? You can take the good, the bad, or the ugly to illustrate for us.
When I graduated college, I set off to travel around the globe for a year. That was my big dream. I had never left the country before. And I drove my old beat-up car out to New York City, and I guess I planned to sell it and go off to Europe and go around the globe that way. But before I could leave the country, I met a German traveler named Lothar. And he said to me he wanted to see America, and he wasn't sure how to do that. He was looking for some advice. Should he take Greyhound, Amtrak? And, you know, I said those connect the big cities, but I'm not quite sure that's the way to do it. And he wasn't sure he wanted to buy a vehicle. And so I said, you know what? I'm on this journey with no adventure. You want a road trip with me? And I had been throughout the States quite a few times, but to see my own country through his eyes, you know, things like the Grand Canyon were obviously impressive to him, but to be in a Waffle House in the South and watch him playing Johnny Cash on the jukebox and just how magical that was made me appreciate where I come from so much more. And actually that led to pretty much the whole concept for On the Road Bus Adventures.
What a nice story, Brian. Leslie, do you have a favorite travel story from your adventures?
I have a lot of them, but one that comes to mind is when Brian and I, we spent some time living in New Zealand. We managed a guest house there, and we hitchhiked across the whole South Island. And we just, the stories of the people we met were so great. We just met the most random mix of people. We took a ride from these beautiful Australian girls, and then the next guy that picked us up, he had tattoos on his entire, covering his entire face. And I remember we were both kind of, you know, at first like scared, a little bit of scared, like, oh, who are we taking the ride from? But he was the nicest, most gentle, intelligent man, and we had a great conversation with him.
Meeting people is a big part of the adventure. That's why we stay away from the word tour, because we don't want it to be predictable. There's a lot of opportunities to meet new characters along the way. That's part of being on the road, I think.
Okay, well, we've enjoyed having you tell us a little bit about your adventure, your entrepreneurial adventure. Brian and Leslie Triplett, On the Road Bus Adventures is their new company. You can find out more by going to our website, listening to this conversation again if you'd like to, or we'll have a link there to their website, ontheroadbusadventures.com. We wish you all the best. Brian and Leslie Triplett, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that does it for our program today. Remember, if you know of an innovator in your community, someone who's trying out a new business venture, launching a new facet of their business, let us know. And maybe we'll talk with them in a future program about Iowa innovators. Write to us. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.